not have access here, or?
Yeah.
Just a short?
Yeah, just today.
Just today.
He's giving it in the morning.
Yeah.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Thanks. So, today, of course, we are continuing with our discussion of the Canto 8, coming to the concluding portions of this pastime with Bali Maharaj. And we're looking at chapter 20 today. I'll read this summary. So, of course, the first paragraph of these summaries literally summarizes the whole thing, and then from there the summaries expand that a little bit. So the summary of this 20th chapter is as follows. Despite his knowledge that Vamanadeva was cheating him, Bali Maharaj gave everything to the Lord in charity, and thus the Lord extended his body and assumed a gigantic form as Lord Vishnu. Okay, so that's the whole thing in a nutshell. And then the summary expands like this. After hearing the instructive advice of Sukracharya, Bali Maharaj became contemplative. Because it is the duty of a householder to maintain the principles of religion, economic development and sense gratification, Bali Maharaj thought it improper to withdraw his promise to the brahmachari. To lie or fail to honour a promise given to a brahmachari is never proper, for lying is the most sinful activity. Everyone should be afraid of the sinful reactions to lying, for Mother Earth cannot even bear the weight of a sinful liar. The spreading of a kingdom or empire is temporary. If there is no benefit for the general public, such expansion has no value. Previously, all the great kings and emperors expanded their kingdoms with a regard for the welfare of the people in general. Indeed, while engaged in such activities for the benefit of the general public, eminent men sometimes even sacrifice their lives. It is said that one who is glorious in his activities is always living and never dies. Therefore, fame should be the aim of life, and even if one becomes poverty-stricken, for the sake of good reputation, that is not a loss. Bali Maharaj thought that even if this brahmachari, Vamanadeva, were Lord Vishnu, if the Lord accepted his charity and then again rested him, Bali Maharaj would not envy him. Considering all these points, Bali Maharaj finally gave in charity everything he possessed. Lord Vamanadeva then immediately extended himself into a universal body. By the mercy of Lord Vamanadeva, Bali Maharaj could see that the Lord is all-pervading and that everything rests in his body. Bali Maharaj could see Lord Vamanadeva as the Supreme Vishnu, wearing a helmet, yellow garments, the mark of Srivats, the Kastuba jewel, a flower garland, the ornaments decorating his entire body. The Lord gradually covered the entire surface of the world, and by extending his body, he covered the entire sky. With his hands, he covered all directions, and with his second footstep, he covered the entire upper planetary system. Therefore, there was no vacant place where he could take his third footstep. Text number one. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikit, when Bali Maharaj was thus advised by his spiritual master, Sukracharya, his family priest, he remained silent for some time, and then, after full deliberation, he replied to his spiritual master as follows. So, as explained by Prabhupada in his purport, quoting Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti the core, Bali Maharaj remained silent at a critical point. How could he disobey the instruction of Sukracharya, his spiritual master? But Bali Maharaj considered that Sukacharya was no longer to be accepted as a spiritual master, for he had deviated from the duty of a spiritual master. According to Shastra, the duty of the guru is to take the disciple back home, back to Godhead. If he is unable to do so and instead hinders the disciple in going back to Godhead, he should not be a guru. The spiritual master helps the disciple attain this stage by developing Krishna consciousness. Now, Sukacharya had advised Bali Maharaj to deny the promise to Vamadadeva. Under the circumstances, therefore, Bali Maharaj thought there would be no fault if he disobeyed the order of his spiritual master. He deliberated on this point. Should he refuse to accept the advice of his spiritual master, or should he independently do everything to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He took some time. After deliberating on this point, he decided that Lord Vishnu should be pleased in all circumstances, even at the risk of ignoring the Guru's advice to the contrary. Anyone who is supposed to be a guru but who goes against the principle of Vishnu Bhakti cannot be accepted as a guru. If one has falsely accepted such a guru, one should reject him. Then there's a quote from the Mahabharata and Shivaji Goswami discussing this point, advises that such a useless guru, a family priest acting as guru, should be given up, and that the proper bona fide guru should be accepted. So we may call them a family priest, or, you know, as we see from the character of Sukacharya, we may consider that Sukacharya had materialistic motivations for his own welfare, and he directed Bali Maharaj in such a way, not for, that was favourable for Vishnu Bhakti, but that was favourable for the outcome for Sukacharya. So it's a very quite a controversial point, isn't it? Really, because we don't want all the devotees reading this, and then every time the senior devotee or the guru does something they can't understand, oh, out the door, grab him by the scruff of the neck, out in the road. you can't go ditching the guru that quickly. but still, we have to understand this point. So, in this kind of question, we've had circumstances where sometimes senior devotees are otherwise generally helpful for people's Krishna consciousness, but occasionally they do something which is against the principles of Krishna consciousness, try to lead their disciples in that way. We see that in the early days it was Jayatirtha Maharaj. Originally Prabhupada nominated 12 gurus. One of them was Jayatirtha Swami. He was a Grihast. No, he wasn't a Maharaj, he was a Grihast actually. But he was one of the gurus in England. Do you remember him? A bit before his time, yeah. Heard the name, because he was a bit infamous the way he... Because there ended up being a lot of kirtans mixed with intoxication and hallucinative sort of drugs and things. You never heard about that? And... the regular services of the devotees stopped, and they were sort of trying to, get ecstasy within the kirtan, and there were some intoxications and all sorts of things. It just really deviated significantly from the program Prabhupada had given us and went in a wholly different way, you know, a bit of an ecstasy crew under the guidance of the guru, to quite an extreme point. And I think one of his disciples come and chopped his head off with a sword or something like that. He was decapitated. And of course, you know, the society had to help many, because they had a big following, thousands and thousands of disciples. And they had to be, it was very difficult for them to, they had to reject him and that path, although he's an ISKCON guru. So ISKCON had to reject him, and they had to help the disciples to reject this person. Was a bona fide guru, then he deviated from the path and took you on a way which was against the principles of ISKCON. And so, and you know, there have been some gurus who have been somewhat had to be disendorsed. Sometimes temporarily, sometimes permanently. So, you know, it happens. And but the difficult thing is that, you know, which happened with my first guru as well. I won't mention his name, but, you know, he's no longer allowed to act as a spiritual master in ISKCON for life, you know, or take any authoritative position. So, but previously he was a guru with thousands and thousands of followers, thousands of disciples. And, you know, when they're disendorsed by ISKCON, you know, many disciples, they wouldn't accept that. You know, there's that sentimental attack. Even the person is no longer fit to be a guru. They, for years and years and years, they struggled with that point, that, you know, they refused to accept that they, you know, to not see that person as their guru eternally. So, you know, so it does happen, and it won't be the last time we see in ISKCON that sometimes someone may be endorsed as a guru, spiritual authority, and then they're disendorsed. No, not just in initiating gurus, sometimes GBCs, sometimes temple presidents, sometimes regent secretaries. You know, and then you get a more minor situation where, you know, I think I've mentioned before in class that, you know, there was one Prabhupada disciple, probably one of the biggest collectors of, you know, donations or money, you know, selling for the purpose of collecting Lakshmi. You know, one of the biggest in ISKCON, definitely the biggest in Australia, Prabhupada disciple. He used to, when we had a Christmas marathon, he put his beads down. Putting my beads down, I won't pick them up again until after the marathon. It could be a month, six weeks. If you just, you know, dedicate yourself to collecting money. And so that was the sort of things that he would do. You know, no reading, no program, and sort of because of his leading personality, it was almost like people wanted to follow that. And he was giving a class one day while he was temple president, and he was talking about Sankirtan and what have you. And I was, you know, I can't remember why I brought it up as a question, but I said that, you know, on a daily basis, always take the Bhagavad Gita with me on Sankirtan. And, you know, I read a verse, I I do some sales, I read a verse, I do some sales, I meditate on those verses as I'm going through the day. And in class he said, that's Maya. Ganga, that's Maya. And you cannot take the Bhagavad Gita with you out on Sankirtan when you go out on Sankirtan. That's Maya. So I rejected that. Because I understood, you know, I knew very well that it was the fact that I could take my mind off the difficulties of that task, you know, as a young man, in the early 20s, you're not associating with women, you're not taking intoxication, you're not socialising, you're barely even seeing your family. You're working from morning to night, and the disturbance of the mind and the senses, the only thing that, you know, keeps you in control is your good rounds in the morning, and then during the day to be able to fix your mind on Krishna through, you know, for myself, I always had a love of Prabhupada's books. For him to say not to do that was almost like saying, well, you know, you go out in Sankirtan, put your Bhagavad Gita. Well, I thought to myself, well, I probably won't be there at the end of the week. You know, you take away the thing that's keeping me in the service, you know, from day to day, you know, week to week. You take that off me, I probably won't last 2 weeks as a devotee. And I thought, well, that's Maya. You know, that's Maya. Yeah. So I rejected that statement. Although I didn't reject him as a temple president, I didn't reject him as a senior devotee. So there's an example where I rejected part of, you know, that occasionally he was switching in as a guru type figure, and occasionally he was switching out as far as I was concerned. You know, some things just didn't tally with what Prabhupada wanted us to do, and he didn't quite understand the ramifications. Of course, he fell down completely from Krishna consciousness, 100%. And you know, it's that deviation from just, you know, not sticking tightly to what his spiritual master had given him, just allows Maya to come in and just wreak havoc. So, and somehow or another, I, who should be guilty of rejecting his spiritual authority, at least partially, I should have been the one who lost Krishna's favour. But as we see here, sometimes we have to make that decision. We see in the Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna was asked to kill his, you know, kill somebody, and, you know, Arjuna was saying that they're like my teachers, gurus, seniors. How can I kill them? They're worthy of my worship on the platform of guru. And but Krishna pointed out that such personalities were no longer fit because their sense of discrimination made them choose the side of Duryodhana, whereas Krishna, his will was that a pious devotee of the Lord, Yudhisthira Maharaj, would rule the kingdom for the benefit of everyone's welfare, the proper religious principles, whereas Duryodhana would have ruled the kingdom for his sense gratification. Still, you know, he may have kept the citizens happy with sense gratification. As far as I understand, Duryodhana had that ability to keep them happy because there was, you know, and there's enough religious principles there. The people felt that they were, but ultimately, Duryodhana placed himself in the centre and not Krishna. Whereas Yudhisthira placed Krishna in the centre of everyone's life. So, they also were deemed unfit to be seen as guru, or teacher, or a superior person that should be followed. But there's another. Any comments or questions on that?
First spiritual master, Bhavananda Swami.
I was initiated by him in 1st of January 1979 in Mawalamba. And I think somewhere in the late 80s, all hell broke loose in this zone in New Zealand when he was detected to be, you know, performing activities which were, you know, not even acceptable for any devotee, let alone a guru. So, you know, he was no longer allowed to practice as a guru. But that caused, I remember those days, in those days I was in New Zealand, at that time it was so difficult that because in those days it was zonal acharya, in one country everyone was a disciple of the same guru, unless you're a Prabhupada son. So everyone was his disciple. If you went to Europe, everyone was a disciple of that one, so they were zonal. So they just, everyone becomes a disciple of the one guru in that ruling those country. So they each had their zone. Other gurus didn't initiate in their zone. And that meant that what happened was that in New Zealand, if devotees still kept their faith in the guru, then something like 50% of people hated them. So you imagine, like, you know, I've known you for 10 years, or longer than I've known you. And then all of a sudden, tomorrow, you find out there's bad news, the guru's been behaving badly. Next thing, you hate me with a passion because we have a different view. We're no longer friends. This that quick, that one person accepts the guru and the other person no longer does. And that, you know, you know, for someone to be completely opposed to the guru is such a sudden disruption that people can't grasp it. Even they understand the gravity of what the person's done, and that how could you be, you know, and they just hate them. And the other lot, you know, they hate the other lot. But like the anger, the devotees who were friends for years and years and years, all of a sudden they were worst enemies. And if you didn't choose a side because you were trying to think about it, that was my position. Basically, I was just trying to assess the situation for a long time. What had actually happened? Get all the facts. Then both sides hated you. Because you didn't take their side, you didn't take their side. So then both sides hated you. You hated more than anyone. It was so, it just, everything just crashed. Sangatan stopped. Services stopped, devotees left, the ones that stayed fought with each other for a long time. A lot, you know, probably a lot of devotees haven't even heard these, you know, the full extent of, you know, the things that happened there.
And these are all just after Prabhupada left.
What's that?
These are all just after Prabhupada left.
This, so basically Prabhupada left in 1977. Then we had the zonal acharyas, And then what happened was that Maharishi Master, you know, perhaps in the, I'm not sure, but somewhere maybe in the mid-80s, possibly even earlier, started to have very significant fall downs. Of a very wretched nature. And so, you know, this is like, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years after Prabhupada left. But by the time, you know, but other gurus had fallen away before him. And other gurus fell after him. See, of the 12, you know, there was a few who did not fall away under major circumstances, whether it was Tamal Krishna, there was Ridhananda Maharaj, Chaitpataka Maharaj, I think Satsarup still going well, Satsarup Maharaj. I think that's it. You know, there was Bhagavan, there was Hamsa Duda, you know, there was Bhavananda, there was Harikesh, Rameshvara, you know, I'm trying to think of all of them. What's that? Jayatirtha. Kirtanananda and so, you know, literally, so they were the only gurus, and they were going down within that span of time, the 80s, early 90s. And then, of course, then you had the difficulty where some disciples were. The guru fell down, they'd take initiation from another guru, and then they went down. You know, one of the others only chose. And then another guru, and then they went. So, you know, whole zones were collapsing. You know, it was a terrible time. And, you know, the way things come about was very unusual. I remember going to India one year, I think I was in Vrindavan, having breakfast, I was eating breakfast with someone, and I'd never heard anything, any negative thing ever about my spiritual master, my first spiritual master. And one devotee just started saying, "Oh, who's your guru?" And I said, "Oh, Abhinanda." Oh, he just went off. I'm just eating my puffed rice, a bit of yogurt. Off he went. Criticised, done it. I'm thinking, who is it? Is this guy a nutcase? Or, you know, like I've never heard any, you know, for breakfast. And then he's getting angry at me because I'm not taking, you know, it's like the first time I've ever heard, and he's getting angry at me because I'm not like just, you know, storming up to, you know, throw my guru off the balcony or something. That was just really strange. Actually, the first time I ever suspected that there may be something unusual about my spiritual master was way before I even heard that, and it was in a dream. So, you know, I went to this place where we were preaching Krishna consciousness. So I went in there and I was talking to some people, there was a little kirtan, so it was like someone's home program. And someone said, "Oh, your spiritual master's out the back there in the other room." I said, "Really? What's he doing here?" So I went out to see him. And when I saw him, he was sitting there cross-legged preaching to people, but he was in a pair of floral tights. Now, of course, I found out later on that he was, you know, gay. That came out later on. I never even knew that. But I was just, you know, when I woke up, I thought, is this like a premonition? Is there something I should know about? You know, but it was like a premonition that, you know, there's a lot of things about to be revealed about your spiritual master, which, you know, you don't know and which you need to know. You know, that was the first thing I ever knew. So anyway, yes, very, very difficult times. You know. And of course, ISKCON was placed in a very, very precarious position. Not many devotees survive through that. You know, you sort of wonder, oh, where's all your God brothers and God sisters? Can get, you know, from there. It's those sort of things. We lost thousands, hundreds. You know. Even if they stayed for a little bit, you know, the years after that. And then, you know, then of course, you know, it was sort of during, you know, after that, you know, you get people like Narayan Maharaj gradually coming and sort of picking up, you know, taking advantage of the situation. Not to help the devotees, but to seize, you know, a gathering for himself, for his own purpose. Not to assist ISKCON in a time of difficulty, but to take advantage of it and you know, allow it to collapse and then literally ride on the back of that. So, and then of course we lost a lot of people through that, you know, going to, you know, different personalities. And, yeah, and then, you know, there was, you know, so many different things like that, so. You know, quite controversial times, but you know, so we read this here, you know, that here Bali Maharaj, you know, he had to reject his guru. Let's hope that no one ever has to go through that, you know. And there's a book, Bhajanamrita, something by Narahari Sakara, the core. And he writes, you know, because that book circulated because no one knew what to do. But he writes, of, you know, what is the process when your guru falls down? What is the etiquette? You certainly don't, you know, people turn into violent fanatics, you know, wanting to tear each other's to pieces. You know, there's a process. There's a process of dealing with, you know. Sometimes people can be reformed. Sometimes people can be corrected, you know. And then sometimes they can't. And then, you know, one is, even then, one is supposed to, you know, notify that I no longer accept you as a spiritual master. I'm taking your permission, but I'm going to take another person as my spiritual master, like that. But, you know, even then there's an etiquette like that. So it's not a free-for-all, you know, spiteful sort of a business, which it turned into, actually. Can we just a little bit more light there? So any more comments or chapter 20, text number 1. Yeah, any more comments? So, of course, you know, one of the interesting things, again, you know, these are the things that they're very important. Because what actually happened then was that, you know, quite often you hear myself, perhaps in Srimad Bhagavatam classes or in Bhaktivedanta, Bhaktivedanta Bhava, saying that there are certain things which were in ISKCON in Prabhupada's time which were there just after Prabhupada's time when I left, and then gradually they've disappeared, and they need to be replaced, some certain things, you know, especially etiquettes between devotees and their senior, you know, Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis. What I've seen in ISKCON is that from that time, in many ways, there's a lot of repair of trust. There's a lot of cynicism and distrust between devotees and anyone who may ordinarily naturally be senior to them. That has never quite recovered to the point it should be. That's one casualty. People don't see the difference because that's all they're used to. And because of the, you know, complete total breakdown of etiquette in, you know, outside of ISKCON, you know, in Kali Yuga, then, you know, whatever's better than that is good. But actually, there's a lot more that there's a much more sweet and nectarian relationship between, you know, with trust between devotees and authorities. The second thing I've seen is that just like I spoke about this when King Vena, although he was a rascal, but he's very powerful. And when he was killed, so many rogues and rascals seized power. A lot of countries, you know, around the world, sometimes they've got these dictators who are very sinful, sadistic, violent, you know, persons robbing the country, you know, suppressing the citizens, but still they're fearful to replace them because all the people worse than them, many, so that although it's like that, that one person still holds so many tyrants at bay. And when that one dictator is gone, then the citizens have many, many rascals coming in, you know. So I actually, you know, one of the things I saw is that persons who weren't sometimes as qualified were able to get more and more senior positions. Which didn't really help the situation. You know, you've gone through a situation where you've had a total breakdown of trust because the guru, the zonal chair, really you've got one supreme authority, zonal chair, they're gone. Okay, now we're going to, you know, a new era, and you get people who are not quite qualified and perhaps really want the position for the sake of position. You know, they have some significant material traits. They don't, not quite as trained in Krishna consciousness, but somehow in the vacuum they've taken positions of authority and what have you, see? And that really hasn't helped the trust issue between, you know. I see it as clear as day because I've seen it when it's really nectar. I saw it break down and I see what it is in the present day. And then also then you see other things where, you know, for instance in a temple like this where you have an insurgence of a Hindu influence, which has another, you know, influence again. So, the books are so important because, you know, over 10,000 years of the Sankirtan movement, you know, what should be done, what is the mood, what is proper etiquette, what is good qualities, what is proper management, who is fit to be authority, you know, how to be an authority, who should be rejected. Everything there is almost like carved in stone. That will never change. That's our good fortune. That's why, and if we lose our vision the light of the Bhagavat, then so many anomalies will continue and worsen. And new anomalies will come. The Bhagavatam is what it's the Shastras left by the Acharyas, left by Krishna, which protect the process of pure devotional service. And that whole process of pure devotional service depends upon every devotee associates with devotees who are more senior to them to help them advance in Krishna consciousness. Every devotee. And if a devotee finds it difficult to put their trust in senior devotees, that's a very serious consequence for the advancement of spiritual life in Krishna consciousness, because everything, you know, a devotee, there is not one person, as Narottam Das Thakur says, no one has ever become liberated without taking shelter of a Vaishnava. It's not going to happen. Because we see that as we go through the 10th canto, Krishna, he is so indebted to his pure devotees that he has given himself, I am your property. So Krishna, generally, he doesn't just, yes, I'll give you my mercy, I'll give you my... When his devotees, yes, you can have Krishna, you can have Krishna, then Krishna will. Krishna works through his devotees. He has given himself to them. To glorify them. That's the way it works. So if we don't, if that process where a devotee doesn't feel that they have senior devotees that they can take shelter of, the whole process breaks down there. And it is one of the things that ISKCON, as we said, because of the fall of nearly the majority of the 12 acharyas, zonal acharyas after Prabhupada, all of them fallen down. And some of the fall downs were very, very dramatic incidences that really, just the nature of the fall down, which really rocked the disciples. And then the way the zones, the way the disciples turned against each other, and then to go to another zonal acharya and for them to fall down, so many different things. The trust in senior Vaishnavas, and then for people to, in that power vacuum, for many not as qualified as you would like persons, it's good to have people stepping up, but somehow, in many cases people were taking advantage of the power vacuum to take positions they weren't really qualified for. And so, all of this continues unto this day. And then we have a huge amount of money coming into ISKCON, which we didn't have before. And that also has really, added an air of, how much do we trust, our senior devotees who are dealing with so much money in perhaps a not so transparent way. So there's so many issues. Those issues, so therefore, this topic that sometimes a devotee may have to make the decision that either partially or totally, someone in a senior position may not necessarily their advice may either be completely rejected in the case of Sukracharya. As a guru, or sometimes some of their decisions may be rejected, and in one sense, all of these things, if we take how does Krishna allow this, In one sense, one of the things that it has done is it has forced devotees to study Prabhupada's books, his life and teachings, that what is actually the standard, what is, you know, where do I, you know, what is the proper standard for things. Let's go to Prabhupada's books, and we see that throughout the movement, that the devotees are not just distributing books, but they're now starting to read them. So I was always fortunate, and that's probably why I'm still here today, is because, you know, I'd read Bhagavad Gita and Nectar Devotion before I ever met a devotee. I had a relationship with Prabhupada in his books. Whatever the devotees, you know, whatever the devotees were doing, whatever chaos they were creating amongst themselves, whether they were disciples or gurus, I was really here to read Prabhupada's books, and that's through the good and the bad. I've always been able to just keep reading Prabhupada's books and trying to follow his instructions. So, and Prabhupada himself is such a spotless devotee that not only can we follow his books, but we can follow his examples without doubt. So, so that has also forced devotees not just to, you know, take shelter of one or two authorities, but literally each and every devotee is now being encouraged, and rightly so, that each and every devotee should thoroughly absorb themselves in Prabhupada's life, his teachings and his books, as well as their spiritual master. In fact, as far as the spiritual masters and the authorities' position in ISKCON is that they're supposed to help us to understand Prabhupada's mood and mission and follow his instructions. We definitely have a relationship with such spiritual masters, 100%. But that is the pivotal relationship. That is the role of any senior devotee, is to help people to become firmly fixed in the actual teachings that Prabhupada has presented and demonstrated. And when a senior devotee is presenting something deviant or obstructing that, there's a problem. There's a problem on behalf of that senior devotee. If a senior devotee is obstructing a devotee's progress in sincerely and innocently pursuing spiritual life through the study of Prabhupada's books, his teachings, and how to practice that, then there is a problem with that authority. If, you know, it's a, you know, mostly they're doing the right thing and occasionally they're doing something silly, then we just reject that one or two silly things. We don't have to drag everyone down from their positions and, you know, their pedestals and what have you, because they're also, you know, like us, everyone makes some mistakes and what have you. But we should be able to see, okay, that was a bit of a clanger, that was a bit silly, that was a bit foolish, you know. They're in a senior position, but that's definitely not right. You know. But Krishna would, you know, so if it's like that, Krishna protects everyone. You know. I've told you the story of the Sankirtan party in Perth. Right? Where, I'll tell you again, it's a good story. At Krishna Protection. You know this one? We're on Sankirtan in the mall in Perth. And the temple president was a Prabhupada disciple. I won't say his name. He's no longer with us in this movement. So, you know, this is in the early days. Perth was a very small centre. It wasn't a centre, it was a little house in the suburbs. We had a regular Sunday feast. You know, we collected money. We were trying to establish a centre, a bigger centre, maybe with a restaurant. was going to take a couple of years of work, which it did. We had basically, compared to the other centres around Australia and the world, you know, it was a tiny little, you know, house in the suburbs of Perth, and no one really took much notice, except that we, you know. So the temporary president must have thought, well, you know, I'd like to get as much attention as maybe some of the other big personalities in Australia. There was a situation where Cormann had challenged some council or something. They were trying to stop the kirtan on the street or something, and you know, he sort of challenged that and ended up getting thrown in jail, and then did a fast and he got used to it. So then it got publicised in the newspaper. Prabhupada talks about it in some of his lectures and what have you. So it sort of brought a lot of attention to the Hare Krishna movement, and you know, a lot of people sympathised with Cormann and what have you. So he, you know, it was like Cormann become, you know, well known around the world, and you know, for doing something wonderful for ISKCON, going through some great sacrifice. So I guess he wanted to do something like that. Let me get some publicity. So we went, he said to me, you know, I know he can try this, because as we're leaving the temple to go out on Harinam, he said to me, Gangeshwar, Ganga, I was known as Ganga, if we get stopped by the police today, if they ask who the leader is, you say you're the leader. Okay, you know. So I thought it was a bit strange, but anyway, so we go out, we're in the mall, and we stand with our backs towards the Myers window, the big shopping centre. So we're standing there, and the manager comes out and said, look, you're blocking our window. You know, so there's a little eave that comes out about a metre. He says, if you step forward 1 metre and dance and chant, do whatever you like, you're not blocking our window, but actually under this eave, you're on our private property. Because if you don't move, you know, we'll call the police. So, you know, he came up to the temple president and said, you know, I want to speak to the leader. And he looked at me, so, you know, I spoke to him. And so then, you know, I turned to the TP and I said, I told him what he said. He said, Ganga, tell him we're not moving. Have you heard this story? I don't, yeah. Anyway, I said to the manager, we're not moving. And the TP also said, tell him to chant Hare Krishna. We're not moving, and would you like to please chant Hare Krishna? Anyway, he said, I'm going to call the police, you don't move. So he calls the police. Police come. They come up. Who's the leader? I'm the leader. So, you know, they said, move forward, 1 metre, that's it. And otherwise, we'll chuck in the paddy wagon and off down to the station, throw in jail. So, we're not moving, and would you like to please chant Hare Krishna? I'm just repeating what the TV. All right then, into the paddy wagon. So, of course, you know, our wives, you know, looking at the man thinking, oh my God, these men. Why do we even bother with them? They walked off with the little babies and the prams, went back to the temple. All the men got thrown in jail. So we're in the jail. TP says, if the police ask you who the leader is, you say you're the leader. Now, at this stage, I don't know what his plan was, but I think what had happened was that he'd previously been fingerprinted, and I think he had some outstanding fines against him. So if he said he was the leader, if you were the leader, you had to come out, get your fingerprints taken, and then, you know, they were going to question you or whatever like that. So, you know, you were going to be responsible for the whole thing. So he thought if he said he was going to be the leader now, it's almost backfiring on him. You know, he can't get the publicity because he'd have to give his fingerprints and take that. I don't know what he was thinking anyway. So the police come in, they said, so who's the leader? He looked at me, he said, yeah. So I said, I'm the leader. He said, you're bailed out. Like that. So I actually got out, because what had happened was that this devotee who used to supply Asian paintings to the temple, which we used to sell, he'd come through from Hong Kong, just flown in with a load of paintings, and he didn't know who the temple president's non-Vaishnava name was, so he didn't know who to ask for. So he just said, you know, I need to speak to the leader, thinking he was going to bail out the TP. And so I come out. So anyway, they'd only bail one person out. So I got bailed out, and I went back to the temple. And I said to the ladies, we've got two choices. We can leave the TP and, you know, his followers in jail for a day or two, or we can try and scrape together a couple of $100 and bail them out. It was a unanimous decision, leave them in jail. So we left him in jail. So anyway, but as you see, you know, somehow or another, generally, you know, because not everything that person did was as ridiculous. A lot of hard work was done, and you know, to establish a centre over there, and he gets some of the credit of that. But some things were ridiculous, and so some things I tried to reject, and some things I had no choice. But Krishna protected me. So I wasn't taking the first opportunity to try and dethrone someone for my own benefit, you know, let me be TP or whatever like that. You know, you're just tolerating a bit of a silly situation, you know, without any motivation, without any malice, you know. So sometimes it's like that, and Krishna will protect it, even if one is, you know, under the direction of someone who's not, you know, they're by and large are doing the right thing, but not everything is proper. You know, Krishna will protect you. And you know, Krishna will also try to purify that authority who's misbehaving, you know, here and there, but by and large doing the right thing. But if of course, if the authorities push the limit, then Krishna will draw his mercy. If they push the limit and they cause significant offences and difficulties to, you know, devotees under them, Krishna will withdraw their Krishna consciousness. And that's a very important thing, that here, Bali Maharaj, you know, Sukracharya may feel that I'm in a superior position to Bali Maharaj. There is no offence because I'm in the superior position for how I treat my inferior. And if someone takes a senior position feeling that, well, they're my inferiors, if I'm rough with them, you know, there's no offence. They can offend me, but I can't offend them because they're just not important enough to be significant. That's wrong. And that's mentioned in the Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur. One, you know, Vaishnava Aparad, one should never think that, oh, such and such a devotee, they're not very important devotee, therefore it's not really, the Vaishnava Aparad doesn't have much effect. No. Never think that. Because it will have the same effect, and one can, lose the privilege of devotional service. Because devotional service, it doesn't matter whether one is a new devotee or a devotee over many, many years, even on the position of a guru. For both of them, devotional service is a privilege. Dina Krishna, was that Dina Krishna? Dasika, you know. The prayers to Tulasi. Krishna Krishna Tasika Eyina Mula Hoya Shiradha Govinda Prenda Sadayina Vasana. Please give me the privilege of devotional service and make me your own major. That devotional service is in fact the blessings of Bhakti Devi. Whatever we do in devotional service is the blessings of Bhakti Devi. And in any position, no matter how elevated, if we offend the Vaishnavas, Bhakti Devi will withdraw her mercy. And we may be engaged in so much devotional service, but we no longer get a spiritual taste from it because she has withdrawn the spiritual effect of it. So they, you know, these are all different considerations. In this point, it's quite a big topic. Because, you know, here, therefore, you know, this Bali Maharaj rejecting his spiritual master. Is an extremely important pastime, one that should make anyone in ISKCON who takes an authoritative or senior position realize that if they lose their sense of discrimination and no longer become fit to act as a senior devotee, then Bhakti Devi will not allow them to perform that service. Because devotional service, any service we do, is a privilege. Any service we do is not due to our qualifications. When we get the privilege of devotional service, through that devotional service we become qualified. And if we lose the privilege of devotional service, our good qualifications disappear. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Trinadapi Sahishnana Amanina Manadina Kiditanya Trinadapi Sahishnana Tadapi Sahishnana Amanina Kiditanya Sadahadi. One should always chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, think of oneself low on the straw in the street. Devoid of all sense of false prestige and should be rooted off all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. In the commentaries to that verse by such personalities as Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they say that to consider oneself a Vaishnava or a guru is one's death knell. Vaishnava or guru is one's death knell. It is because of my, you know, we're thinking, it is because of my qualifications as a Vaishnava, because I'm a Vaishnava or Guru Vaishnava, that I am doing such and such. Because I'm a Vaishnava, whatever we do is done by the grace of Krishna and his spiritual energy. And if Krishna withdraws that, then our position as a great Vaishnava within 1 second turns to dust, floats away in the air. We see with Arjun that after Bala Kurukshetra, a great warrior, defender of religious principles, he couldn't save, you know, the ladies from a band of dacoits. Here's someone, you know, who can fight with 1,000 charioteer warriors, and couldn't, you know, because you know, it's Krishna's pastime, because Krishna didn't need Arjuna to have such prowess anymore. Therefore, he took it away from him. It wasn't required. But it's also, you know, that pastime is there to teach us to be. Any questions or comments?
Ladies, too, we had a discussion earlier at home whether just reading Prabhupada, because they've been saying that if you just read Prabhupada's books, you can become a devotee. There's a discussion whether it is necessary to have devotee association after reading, you know, or just reading Prabhupada's books.
Now, Prabhupada specifically says, when asked that same question, that you can't make advancement in Krishna consciousness properly just by being a bookworm.
Reading
Prabhupada's books, you can't. No.
So you need the guidance to understand the books.
It's essential. There is no other way. It must be there.
You'll enjoy more if you have association when you read.
The scriptural injunctions, that's right, is that it becomes very relishable when you hear it in proper association. It becomes, you know, very enjoyable, you know, and the taste of the Bhagavatam, you know, manifests otherwise one can be licking the jar of the honey and not tasting the honey inside.
I think same thing happened to my Guru Maharaj. He first started reading for 6 months, 4 hours at a stretch. After reading all the books, he went to temple. Then he realized that he did a mistake of not associating with devotees.
And you know, as the scriptural references also say, that, you know, by hearing in the association of devotees, you get a feel for the subject matter very quickly. And especially one is supposed to seek out you know, those who, you know, considered senior to one. We're supposed to try and get, not just stay on the same platform, but we're supposed to hear from, you know, we hear from our spiritual master, we hear from other senior Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, so that we enter into it deeper and deeper, hear their realizations. So
that's what came out in the discussion. But actually, it was my point that Prabhupada says that I am in my books. You can associate with me if you read my books. So is Prabhupada a senior Vaishnava? So aren't we associating with Prabhupada when we read his books? Still, we need association. That was my point. Others, everybody said, no, we need devotee association. And my point was that we are said, Prabhupada says, I am in my books. Prabhupada spoke, we are associating with Prabhupada, so that he is a senior Vaishnava.
Yeah, what's that verse? There's those verses. Srinivatam Svakata Krishnam Punyashavani Kirtanam Hrijanta Svibhadrani Virunoti Svihit Satam. What's the translation of that one? What's the name of that?
By rendering
devotional service with
Bhagavatam every day, whatever anarthas in the heart.
Is it just, does it just say the Bhagavatam or a rendering devotional service?
What's the next verse? Nashta
Praya Subhadrasu Nicham Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamas Loki Bhakti Bhavati Nashti Ki. What's the translation of that one?
My constant service to the devotee Bhagavatam Bhagavat.
Yeah.
All inauspiciousness is.
So it does say there that the process itself of reading the Bhagavatam is to serve the Bhagavat person at the same time. It does say in the Bhagavatam itself that is the process. You know, when Prabhupada was in India, many of the different scholars of Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, they worship Krishna, Vishnu. They would come and talk to Prabhupada and they would demonstrate their great knowledge of these scriptures, bhakti scriptures. Almost to illustrate to Prabhupada that, you know, here are your Western disciples. You know, you've taught them something that is certainly not like my scholarship. Like that. So, here you and I are, Prabhupada. We will talk, you know, your disciples will see, I am also, you know, like you. You know, we have this knowledge of the Bhagavatam. Like, and your disciples will see how that I'm elevated, sort of more on your level, Prabhupada, and above these Western levels. So that was their mood. The Prabhupada completely rejected that. With one statement. Yeah, but they are following. They are serving. You are not. Therefore, what is your position? They are doing everything and you are not. And that is the difference. Therefore, they are very advanced. Those persons, you know, they knew the Bhagavatam, they were quoting the Sanskrit just, you know, off the top of the hat, backwards and forward. You know, there's only a few of Prabhupada's disciples could do that. But Prabhupada was considered, but they are more advanced, they are very advanced. They are the real Vaishnava. Because they are serving Krishna every day with full surrender. You are not. You are quoting your slokas like a pundit, but what are you doing for Krishna? And then on another occasion he said to one of his disciples, so many, you know, from India, they've all got these ideas of Prabhupada, you should do this, Prabhupada, you should do that, Prabhupada, you should do that. And there's so many ideas, but none of them will do anything. Oh, you know, we have so many ideas how Krishna will be served, but we're not going to do anything. See? So, in fact, the service to the Vaishnava is the Bhagavat, which means hearing from the devotee. You know, when you hear from a devotee, you serve that devotee. That's service to the Vaishnava. You hear from them. And then, you know, what you hear, if you can put some of that into your life, then that is also service. But hearing is the main service. You do. One of the main services every devotee will do for their spiritual masters, they'll hear from them and they'll chant Hare Krishna. That is service to the devotees. And, you know, hearing with, you know, full attention and questions and answers, that is the active principle. And then if one can execute what one has heard, put that into practice, what did Prabhupada say? You know, he said, if you're, you know, reading these books or hearing these books, you know, from the Goswamis, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, you're associating with them. And if you follow the instructions that you're hearing, you know, nectar devotion, you know, nectar of instruction, then you are serving, worshipping their lotus feet. So, but that hearing itself is instruction, is service, and then by executing that, you know, to what one can, then that's, you know, service is, that increases the service. So Prabhupada's disciples, they were hearing daily, whereas these pundits that were coming to Prabhupada, literally they wanted to be heard. They're not coming regularly to hear Prabhupada. Oh, they'll come once or twice, and yes, I'm, you know, with Prabhupada, get your picture, you know. You know, they'll Prabhupada's there, and then Prabhupada's gone. Oh, we don't care, we don't hear from him for another 5 years. These disciples are hearing every day, you know, as often as they could. And whatever other disciples have heard, then they're hearing that throughout all the temples daily. But Prabhupada's teachings in his books, and they're also executing that. So that service to the Bhagavad, Prabhupada distinguished as the very advanced platform, and it is why they had so much realization about Krishna, the Sankirtan movement. Whereas these others, although they'd studied the Bhagavatam and so many different things, you know, if the Sankirtan movement passed by them in this lifetime, they wouldn't have even noticed that anything, you know, was lost. You know, for Prabhupada's disciples, if 5 minutes in the day went past, and they somehow neglected to do something towards the Sankirtan movement, they'd be restless. Oh, you know, I was in Maya today, you know. And here are these pundits, the whole Sankirtan movement could go past in their lifetime. And, psh, yeah, it's all right. You know, yes, the money's piling up in the bank, and, you know, my land is increasing, my family's increasing. You know, I've got a good reputation as a pundit. Sankirtan movement, oh yeah, they come and go. I won't do anything in this life. So what is the realization? After reading the Bhagavatam, and you know, once in the day of Brahma, Krishna comes, once in the day of Brahma, Lord Chaitanya comes, it's only 500 years ago, here's his devotee who's distributed Krishna. Oh, you know, anything important happening? Oh, you've got a bunch of hippies chanting Hare Krishna, oh wonderful. Yeah, oh well. What's the big hoo-ha? So what is their realization? So it's like someone, you know, these people who get on their mobile phones and walk into a big truck, big tip truck. Oh, I see so much, I can see so much. Boom. You know, walk into a big hole. They don't see something that's right in front of them. They don't see. Sankirtan movement is there, present. You know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no one has ever even the Vaishnavas for thousands of years have barely understood the pastimes of Radha Krishna. At best, you know, they may understand Krishna up to the Damodar Leela. Radha Krishna, they don't go there because they can't understand it. Sometimes they have a misunderstanding. Lord Chaitanya just gives the full understanding of these topmost pastimes. And then Lord Nityananda is going door to door. You chant Hare Krishna, and become liberated from your ignorance and become immersed in the Sankirtan movement, and that will be, you know, that will be your gift to me. I'm coming, I'm God, Lord Nityananda, he's God, banging on the door, door to door, God's banging on the door. You chant Hare Krishna, become liberated. I'm so eager to give you liberation and to give you Krishna Prema. I'm coming to your door, banging on your door, and you, if you take that, that is your gift to me. How often, you know, we don't see Lord Vamana banging door to door. We don't see, you know, Lord Navasinga banging door to door. He's come, he kills Hiranyakasipu, he's gone. If they're such scholars of the Bhagavatam, they miss the whole thing. The Prabhupada's disciples are fully aware. Here is a spiritual event. So, you know, it shows you that one who serves the devotee, the Bhagavat, that was Prabhupada's, you know, that's where you get, you know, such realization. You can't do it by being a bookworm.
Expanding Mahārāja, the comment, could we say that by reading Śrīla Prabhupāda books, associating Śrīla Prabhupāda books, and also making an endeavor to expand the Sankirtana movement or preaching, then it will be effective.
That's right.
Rather than just reading.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that is service to Prabhupāda, sure. Serving Prabhupāda's mission.
Some way of preaching.
Yeah, it serving,
is,
yeah.
To make it simple, one is reading Prabhupada's books that is having theory, then putting it into practice and realizing it.
Yeah, I mean, we can put the Bhagavatam into practice by, you know, performing, you know, the Payabrata, you know, vow, you know, we can fast on Ekadashis, you know, we can, there's so many things in the Bhagavatam that we can do to put the Bhagavatam into practice. We can perform Shraddhas on Punyakala days and so many things. But above everything, you know, there are 9 processes of devotional service, which are expanded into 64. And of those, 5 are the most powerful and essential. Chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, serving the Vaishnava, hearing the Bhagavatam from an authorized Vaishnava, worshipping the deity of the Lord, and residing in a holy place. Amongst all of those, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and I think the second one was serving the devotees of the Lord are the 2 most prominent and important amongst all of those. So we have the example, say someone, you know, we have the Brahmana who was asked by his spiritual master, the Vaishnava, to read the Bhagavad Gita every day, and yet he didn't know what he was reading. He was illiterate. But he got the full realization of the Bhagavad Gita by serving his spiritual master, not by reading. So, if people come to the movement and they can't, they don't have the propensity or what have you to study Prabhupada's books, if they serve Srila Prabhupada's mission and chant Hare Krishna, they will get the same result. They will not be bereft of all the essential transcendental knowledge they need to go back to Godhead. Therefore it says, Chaita Dapana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Devapanam Shreya Karava Chandra Kavataram Vidya Vadu Jivanam. That this chanting in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is the primary service we do for the Vaishnava, for Srila Prabhupada, is the main service we do to the Vaishnava, is to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra nicely, which includes serving the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, if we do that, then the that Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that is Krishna. Vidya Vadu Jivanam. Vadu is the consort of Krishna, or the wife of Krishna. Vidya Vadu Jivanam. And Jivanam, the life and soul. So, the life and soul of the consort or the Shakti of Krishna is Krishna himself, the holy name. The life and soul, Vidya is another name for Yoga Maya. Vidya is the Shakti of the Lord or Yoga Maya. So the consort of the Lord, the life and soul of Yoga Maya or Vidya, transcendental knowledge, is the holy name. One who chants the holy name of the Lord, then the Yoga Maya is fully active, potent there with Krishna, blessing the devotee who's chanting the holy name. But you can only chant the holy name of the Lord properly, purely, when it's given by a bona fide Vaishnava and under their direction. Therefore, if one chants the holy name of the Lord and associates by serving a Vaishnava guru, Vidya, Yoga Maya, is fully present, revealing everything to that devotee. So again, you know, it comes back to especially chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra given by a bona fide Vaishnava and serving the Vaishnava are the two most important. And it, you know, now Prabhupada says, but for preaching you must read his books. You know, because if you want to preach and be a preacher and you want to take on that service, then especially you must study his books. But a devotee can understand everything they need to understand to attain prema bhakti in this life and go back to Godhead by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and serving the lotus feet of the guru who's being trained to chant nicely and purely. They can become prema bhaktis and go back to Godhead. That's the main thing we should be doing. In the Bhagavad Gita, just try to learn the truth by approaching a bona fide spiritual master.
Inquire
from him, which means hear from him and render service unto him. It doesn't say go to the Shastras. Is that?
Yeah, but now I'm getting confused. Because once Banaswami Maharaj said, for chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you don't need initiation.
That's right.
He said you don't need initiation.
No.
You can go back home to God.
Yeah, but he's not saying you don't need a Vaishnava to give you that holy name.
But initiation means a...
No. You may get the holy name from a Vaishnava and not necessarily be initiated, Diksha initiation.
Okay. There's a difference. What's the difference?
The difference is that you must get the holy name from a Vaishnava.
So that means if now Vaishnavas are going down the street and then the person is just attracted to that and starts chanting Hare Krishna sincerely, they can go back home. They may not be initiated.
No. If devotees are going down the street and someone is attracted to that and starts chanting Hare Krishna, in order for them to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra free, offencelessly, without anathas, without false ego, with a proper understanding of their relationship with Krishna, they must take the association of a Vaishnava to learn how to chant on the liberated platform. If they don't take initiation, it is not a bar. If they can chant on the liberated platform in the association of that Vaishnava or some Vaishnavas, they may not take initiation. But if they can't chant on the liberated platform, Uttama Bhakti, free from anathas, free from offences, they must take initiation to be regulated by the spiritual master. So one is not required to chant, to take initiation, if one can chant on the liberated platform. But if one cannot chant on the liberated platform, one should surrender to a bona fide spiritual master, take initiation, accept them formally. Formally means that, if we accept that here is this Vaishnava, they're definitely giving me the guidance I need to be able to chant on the liberated platform, free from anathas, free from aparads, free from false ego, with a proper understanding of Krishna. They're giving me some instruction, and then they say, give up intoxication. Well, I like to have a little marijuana. I think it helps me in my chanting, and I just get so much more out of it like that. that Vaishnava said I should give up these bad habits, then I'd actually be able to chant better, but I can't do it. I can't give it up. So then, the ninth offence is that one should not chant, one should not describe the glories of the holy name of the Lord to the faithless. And Prabhupada says, that refers that if one does not become an initiated disciple, in other words, if one doesn't surrender to that Vaishnava, one might not take diksha, but one still has to surrender. In other words, one has to put oneself, I'm the patient, you're the doctor, I want to be cured, you know the cure. I'll probably struggle even, I probably won't even want to take the recommendation you're saying, but I'm going to surrender to you what you say I must do. Okay, I'll initiate you. If you're not on that platform, I'm not going to initiate you. Then I can't instruct you. I can instruct you so much, but not beyond that, because there's faithlessness there. If one, there are, there's a certain level of faith that one has whereby they will abide by a Vaishnava fully to be able to rise to the liberated platform in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Now, if someone can do that without initiation, there's no need to take initiation.
So if they can take Shiksha Guru.
They can accept shiksha, but still there must be surrender. Bhagavad Gita says one must approach a bona fide spiritual master, Vaishnava, surrender unto them, inquire from them, and render service to them. Prabhupada says surrender is the first thing. He says even without surrender, they have no right to inquire, and nor is the spiritual master obliged to answer their inquiries, because we are not supposed to preach to those who are faithless. And he says surrender is first. Now, we may have a couple of, you know, people, Prabhupada goes to the hall, or Guru goes to the hall, and they, any questions, they all answer their one question. Yeah, you have a question here, you'll have another question there. Now, when they start asking more specific questions, Prabhupada would say, that you cannot learn in a minute. For that, you'll come and you'll get trained. All right? I'll not answer any more of your questions. You want to know more, that you'll come. You'll do things properly and accept the training process. Someone says, yeah, I want to become a doctor. Okay. But I don't want to officially enroll, and I don't want to really be committed to the, you know, the institution. Oh, that's okay. You got any questions? Yeah, I got a million questions. Well, we're not going to answer them. For that you commit, because the knowledge we're giving you, we're not allowed to give it to you until we know that we have a relationship between you and us as what happens with that knowledge. So, whether one takes diksha surrender or shiksha surrender is the question. One does not have to take diksha surrender if one can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra under the guidance of a Vaishnava. But where you will find that you can actually chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on the liberated platform without the guidance of a Vaishnava, you find that quote. Unless one is, you know, Nitya Siddha. Someone's Nitya Siddha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said that when he began the process of devotional service, he began from Bhava Bhakti. You find a Nitya Siddha. You know, they may do some, you know, unusual things like that. He also rejected one spiritual master. He had one initiating spiritual master who he later rejected because his spiritual master didn't have the proper understanding of Raghunath Das Goswami. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur accepted Jagannath Das Babaji as his Babaji guru. Not Diksha, and Babaji. Basically Shiksha. So he rejected his Diksha Guru and accepted Shiksha from Babaji Maharaj. It shows that even a person of the stature of Bhaktivinoda Thakur understood that one must follow the principles of Krishna and surrender to a Vaishnava, a bona fide guru, either through Diksha or Shiksha or both, then one can inquire from him fully, then the spiritual master will answer those inquiries, and then if one renders service to that spiritual master, then that will take effect.
We hear that Krishna does it, but also does it, showing us examples. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also did it, so showing us examples. But
yeah.
I was trying to understand why Bhanuswami Maharaj had said that it's not necessary to take.
Yeah, it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adi Leela. You probably know that well. But we'll get there after we've done the finish the 12th canto. But so it's there. In other words, what that's showing is that the holy name itself is independent. You see? That's what the verse is showing, is that the when it's saying you don't need to take Diksha. What it's saying is not trying to discriminate that you don't need Vaishnava. It's trying to say the holy name is completely independent with full potencies. It doesn't depend on some other extraneous ritual or source for there to put some potencies into the holy name. You see? That's the point. That's why you don't need to take Diksha. But how does the holy name work? The holy name works by Krishna has given himself to the Vaishnavas. And therefore, although Krishna can independently, without Diksha or without Vaishnava or anything, he doesn't. He manifests the potency of the mantra when it is done under a Vaishnava. Then, to glorify that Vaishnava guru, the mantra works. To glorify the Vaishnava. Yeah. We see that in the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, that, to glorify Narada Muni, Narasimha appeared because Prahlad Maharaj followed the instructions of Narada Muni, and Prahlad Maharaj says, because I serve the instructions of Narada Muni to glorify your pure devotee, you manifest. But Narasimha, Itol Narasimha, Paratol Narasimha, Itol, you meet Itol Narasimha. He is here, he is there, he is everywhere. What is he dependent upon Narada Muni that he can appear? But that's how he works. He chooses out of love to be controlled by his devotees. Now, if one tries to jump up to Krishna neglecting the Vaishnavas, and then Krishna says, well, that's, I don't need your glory, but I particularly want you to glorify my devotees because I love them so much that, I don't want you to glorify me, I want you to glorify, so when Prabhupada spread the Sankirtan movement, in one sense we glorify Prabhupada more than the holy name, don't we? For spreading the Sankirtan movement. And that's the way Krishna likes it. Or we could just remove Prabhupada from the whole history. Oh yeah, Prabhupada did something wonderful. We know about the Hare Krishna mantra now. We've all got it, so let's don't worry about Prabhupada and his mission or anything like that. Let's just all go chant Hare Krishna. How many people do you think will become pure devotees by brushing Prabhupada aside, that we don't even have to think of him, let alone glorify him or go through him? Do you think Krishna would, pay attention? Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati the Kaur said,
we are getting so much of mercy from Prabhupada, so it's natural that we should respect him. We are getting so much of mercy.
Yeah. Samsara Dava, Naralila Loka, Janai Karina, Gana Ganatham. The spiritual map, the cloud, the forest fire is extinguished by the downpour of rain from the cloud. Otherwise, the forest fire, no one can put it out unless it buckets down from the clouds. There's so much is required. So the spiritual master is receiving from the ocean of mercy, he's receiving, and then he's pouring that rain of mercy down on the on the forest fire of material existence. That's the process. Vishwanath Chakravarti the Kaur is teaching us, that's how it works. We may say, the sun's up there, there's a fire over there, the sun, we're not gonna, we don't don't care about the clouds. Just rain yourself. Send rain from the sun. It does. It just works in a whole different way. When the clouds come and extinguish the forest fire, we think, thank God for the rain clouds. But actually, it was the sun. The sun did everything. You know, so that's just the natural thing, way things work. You can't change that system anymore. You can't change the system. It's where rain comes from. It doesn't come directly from the sun. It comes through the cloud. You can't change that system, nor can you change the system that Krishna's mercy comes through the Vaishnavas. It is that fixed up eternally. So one may not necessarily need to take diksha because the holy name itself is sufficient. That's the but Krishna still works through the Vaishnava only. And therefore we must, and that is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah.
I just wanted to add this point, that even in Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Bharat Maharaj explains the negligence of Guru or neglecting the instructions of the Guru,
Even
to such an exalted personality in the Bhavas.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
That is a negative consequences. We
yeah,
have
it's a very good point. Yeah.
To
yeah.
Bhava also still...
very advanced, very advanced devotee. That's a good point, yeah. And then neglected the instruction of the Guru, yeah. Because that's the way Krishna, he won't allow it on any level. I was explaining in a Srimad Bhagavatam class the other day, this principle. If you go back to the spiritual world, you might think, I'm here, no more Guru, you know. That's it, it's me and Krishna, you know, the gang. Radharani comes up. Let me, you know, help you to approach Krishna for this part. Oh, no, I don't need any advice. You know, look, I'll take it from here. You know, I've made it. I'm back. I'm back. No. Eternally, we will be guided from someone superior. And why is that? Because there always someone is superior, and that is Krishna. There will never be a moment in our eternal existence where we're not being guided by, because the actual guru is Krishna. We will always be under guru because Krishna is the guru. Whether he manifests through Radharani directly, whether he manifests through the Diksha Guru down here in, you know, Australia, you know, Bharat Vash, or what have you. Shakshad Darit Vena Samasta Saste Uktasta Tava Vyatiriva Sadhvi Kintu Prabhu Yavri Vashya Vande Guroshi Charanam. The spiritual master is considered the direct representative of the personality of Godhead, Hari, because he is the most confidential servitor. Is considered as a direct manifestation of the Lord. Whatever the Lord wants to do, he will do through his representative. And when we accept that principle, then Krishna reveals himself directly, personally, to that servant of the Vaishnava, servant of the servant, the servant of the Vaishnava. Any other comments? So, you know, it's an interesting discussion. One, we're discussing about rejecting the Guru.
It is basically thinking that Prabhupada, maybe that was a retreat idea, that this Prabhupada, this books alone is enough to, that's a Guru. Prabhupada is giving instructions to this book.
Yeah.
That alone is required, but no,
yeah.
We need.
Yeah.
So that was the point, not that rejecting the Guru.
Yeah. But see, I find that interesting statement because, you know, if you read Prabhupada's books, you would naturally understand the significance of Prabhupada. Right, so let's put this in another context. If you read the books of the six Goswamis, you'll understand the significance that you can't put the six Goswamis aside because we have their books. see? That the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave 8 verses in his Shishastikam. And then he empowered his followers, especially the 6 Goswamis, to write books to expand his entire teachings, which is contained within those 8 verses, according to the Shastras, and the Bhakti Shastras. The 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan, they compiled those literatures and their life, in their life, they personified Prema Bhakti, you know, Rasa, you know, Rasika Bhavas, relishing the Rasa of Prema Bhakti, renunciation, utilizing everything in Krishna's service, not rejecting anything in Krishna's service that is related to Krishna. Their life personifies the teachings. So, and then you have the Bhagavat book and then the Bhagavat person. Prabhupada personified 100% perfectly the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam and which, you know, from where the Goswamis have derived their books, etc. So if you remove the person who demonstrates the practical application of the book, what will you understand from the book? 2, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is no devotee who fully manifested how to enter into the pastimes of Radha Krishna through the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, both internally and externally, and live the perfect life of a pure Prema Bhakti in Grihastha life and in sannyas. There is no devotee who has done that fully as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His life, literally, he is the Bhagavat in person. You can't remove, you can't just say, well, we've got the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, we don't really need him. Because he is non-different from his teachings. You know, Prabhupada is the living Bhagavatam.
We're not removing Prabhupada.
What's that?
We're not removing Prabhupada.
No, but, you know, you're saying the Briksha. No, those people.
Ritvik.
No, they say that. They do. They say, you know, we've got Prabhupada's books. You know, so, you know, why do we need him and his followers, sort of thing. People do say that.
I think from my mother's point of view, it's like Prabhupada's association is in his books, is in his pastimes. So that association itself is so powerful. It's kind of like you're diminishing the value of that association to say that a person cannot become Krishna conscious without that alone.
Yeah, you know, you're diminishing the potency of the association. Service to that person, we serve through, we associate through service. But we're also diminishing the requirement to have a living example who perfectly personifies the teachings. If a person personifies the teachings that can be applied all over the world for thousands and thousands of years, the teachings of the Bhagavatam and of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why would we in any way just take the book and leave aside that person. Why would we want to do that? Why would anyone in their right mind do that?
And the books themselves emphasize the need for association.
And, you know, I cannot imagine anyone reading Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the books of the Goswamis, who would know what to do in their individual life, let alone engage everyone else in the world, if it wasn't for the example of Prabhupada. They'd be doing all sorts of crazy things. There's a lot of things in the Bhagavatam, as we see, where people would, you know, just like, for instance, you know, you have people, the vegan movement, who are, you know, now literally, you know, forcefully storming onto farmers' properties and shutting down their business and, you know, doing all sorts of things. You know, in the early days, I think it might have been the Hari Bols, who were like almost an offshoot of ISKCON. And in New Zealand, they were making bombs, you know, to blow up some of the people who were dealing with meat and, you know, the abattoirs and things like that. And one of the bombs went off and, you know, some of them got injured and what have you. But, you know, as far as they were concerned, you know, that was like because they sort of a little deviated from Prabhupada or a lot, but trying to take from the book. So, you know, you get this fanaticism. You can imagine the amount of fanaticism, violence, discrimination. One of Prabhupada's disciples, who was in charge of the BBT, he said, "We want to put an article in the BBT, you know, because we're against these, you know, butchers, you know, and we want to preach against that sort of thing. I want to write an article." You know, he wanted Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "No. We're not against them. We're not against anyone. They can come. They can take prasadam. They can hear. They can chant Hare Krishna like anyone else. Why should we exclude them? Why should we be against them? They can all come. They can all come and, you know." So you imagine the fanaticism of, you know, that you can derive from the Bhagavatam against women, against people who are gay, against, you know, people who are Muslim. You know, so many things. Prabhupada was the living example, and without his example, we would go so wrong so many times that this movement would be, you know, there wouldn't be a movement. There wouldn't be a movement because everyone would be just fighting as to what the movement should be about. So, you know, Prabhupada himself, the person, is literally, you know, we don't necessarily have a movement because we got the books. We have a movement because we got Prabhupada.
And in the absence of Prabhupada,
what I meant was
the association of his.
No. What I meant was not excluding Prabhupada.
Yeah.
But now Prabhupada is not, we can associate with Prabhupada only through his books. I meant it in that way. So closely reading his books so that we understand about him, reading all about him. So understand closely how Prabhupada dealt with people, how everything. How was it? The reading about Prabhupada and understanding Prabhupada through his books. I mean, I didn't say removing Prabhupada, no.
But you can also understand.
I think
that
he's such a great Vaishnava, and we get so much association through Prabhupada.
You can also understand Prabhupada by chanting Hare Krishna in the way that Prabhupada has taught us to chant Hare Krishna, and by serving the holy name, or even, you know, trying to serve Srila Prabhupada's movement, you will understand Prabhupada. Even if you can't read his books, and Prabhupada himself said that.
So that's what I'm saying. In one word, if you want to put it, through through Prabhupada's books and even reading about Prabhupada, you're getting a theoretical knowledge. But when you associate with the devotees, you're getting the practical knowledge.
No. Either. If you associate with Prabhupada's books, you'll get the practical knowledge, you know, the spiritual knowledge, the full realization. If you're reading in a service attitude to Srila Prabhupada, if you're reading these books like a bookworm to somehow, but not necessarily in a service attitude to Prabhupada, that's a different thing. You may not get so much realization about Prabhupada if you're not reading Prabhupada's books in a service attitude. I'm reading these books, and by reading these books, I hope to be more qualified to do some service that's very pleasing to Prabhupada. You'll understand. You read without that mood, you know, competing with others for who's the best scholar and who know, you know, you won't know Prabhupada so much. But you do any service in ISKCON, trying to please Prabhupada, you'll realize Prabhupada just as much as any other service. You'll feel Prabhupada's presence, and you'll understand, through this movement, you know, just the greatness and the qualities of compassion and liberality and gentleness and what have you that is there within Srila Prabhupada. So,
can we say that we read Srila Prabhupada books to understand his mood and mission, and then accordingly we work for it?
That
could also be a purpose, isn't it?
Yeah.
To understand the instruction or the mood of the person, and then following his instruction very sincerely.
Yeah.
Then one gets the full blessings of the Lord.
That's right. You know, to whatever we do that's somehow pleasing to Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada will reciprocate with that, and we will feel that, we will realize that reciprocation and feel that within our life. Then, as we get free from anathas that disqualify our service, you know, because we still have greed and, you know, we're doing something for Prabhupada, but our mind is disturbed or distracted or drawn away, and our senses are engaged in so many other things. So as we do something that's pleasing to Prabhupada, the anathas disappear, the tendency to commit offences, either Vaishnava aparad or, you know, Nama aparad, they reduce, and then our qualification to serve Prabhupada becomes more pure and more potent and more pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. For instance, we may do a particular service, whatever it is, with a lot of personal motivations and a little bit of attachment to Prabhupada. So that's very pleasing to Prabhupada. If our intention is that I realize that I'm doing in that, and I just want to remove all that self-centered motivation and just, you know, do the service which is 100% just for, you know, his pleasure, you know, Krishna's pleasure. From the very beginning, Prabhupada is completely pleased with us. If that's our intention. From the very first day, Prabhupada is 100% pleased with us. We don't have to wait 10 years or 20 years to become a pure devotee. But any service we do within the movement, whether it be reading Prabhupada's books, worshipping the deities, chanting Hare Krishna, making garlands, if it is done, you know, with a sense that may Srila Prabhupada be happy, and knowing that Prabhupada is happy, I know that Krishna will be happy. And then that is the way we progress. As we do that, we hear that we can make spiritual advancement, and that's very pleasing to Prabhupada, but if we want to help many other spirit souls, as many as we possibly can to make spiritual, we know that Prabhupada is especially pleased with that. And that's why he was so pleased with the book distribution, the study of his books, and the, because it's the Brihat Madanga. That if you chant your rounds, follow the four regular principles, the sister and the temple, Prabhupada is so pleased. But if you say, let me, you know, be it on the big Madanga where hundreds and hundreds of people, thousands of people all over the world, you know, with the same energy are able to, you know, take to Krishna consciousness, then that's very pleasing, you know, more pleasing. And Krishna says that himself in the Gita. One who preaches this Bhagavad Gita, you know, there is no one more dear to me than that person. You know, it's more than the person who just, okay, I've understood Bhagavad Gita, I can go back home to Godhead. But I'm going to take, I know that Krishna, seeing, you know, the spirit souls suffering in the material world, that's not his pleasure. For Krishna to have, you know, to see those spirit souls back in the spiritual world out of this suffering. No one likes to see their children suffer. For, you know, life after life, terrible, terrible suffering. To actually, you know. So Lord Nityananda, there's Lord Nityananda here. Thank you, Sean. He used to go door to door. He was very, most dear to Lord Chaitanya. Who is that? Lord Nityananda. He's most dear because he knew what Lord Chaitanya wanted more than anything. So he didn't just sit in some corner, chant Hare Krishna, say, yes, you know, I'll do that, and hang around Lord Chaitanya and then go back to him. Have a good time. He personally went. He, you know, although he's God, he thought, I know how to please Lord Chaitanya. I will personally go, and he would knock on people's doors. Dear sir, please chant Hare Krishna. And if you chant Hare Krishna, you'll be liberated from the cycle of birth and death. And he would preach like that. And when they understood it, he would say, now you chant Hare Krishna, you become liberated. You go back to Godhead, you do that, and that is the best gift that you can give me, and I will be so satisfied. I'll be dancing all over you. And then he would go, and then, you know, he would see Lord Chaitanya, you know, each day and give him reports. And he would search out the most fallen, the most wretched, to deliver them. So, you know, that is, so, you know, that is, so Prabhupada, you know, the Srila Prabhupada's books are called the Brihat Madanga, you know, that they spread the holy name, the glories of the name, form, fame, pastimes, more than kirtan on the street, more than just chanting your japa, more than opening temples, more than anything in this movement. The Brihat Madanga, it delivers conditioned souls on a greater scale with greater potency more than anything. And that is the most. So therefore, you know, if you study Prabhupada's books in order to preach, and then seeing the most glorious, potent, expert preacher, Prabhupada, that what did you do, Prabhupada, you know, that your preaching was so effective, then let me follow that, and Prabhupada will fully reveal, you know, both the books and himself as the most glorious preacher that ever, you know, entered this universe. And, you know, naturally, when someone is most pleased with you, so pleased that literally they give you their heart. You're giving your heart to someone and they give their heart to you. Naturally, you will know that person more intimately than anyone. You give your heart to Srila Prabhupada through his books, especially because it's so powerful preaching, he'll give his heart to you. And two people give each other the heart, they know each other better than anyone. But that's not just from reading Prabhupada's books. If you read Prabhupada's books, you'll preach. And help people to, you know, study Prabhupada's books. But if you read the books and don't preach, and don't understand that that's most pleasing, then you've missed a lot in the books. And here we're studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Bhakti Sarvabhauma, if we get there, we study Lord Chaitanya's teachings, which is then the application of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, the Bhakti Shastras, exactly as we see in the life of Srila Prabhupada, literally just an extension of Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan Party, main branch of Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan Party. Then, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam comes to life even more so. And then we more fully understand the nature of Srila Prabhupada. So, you know, so any comments in Nirmala? Nirmala? Absorbed in the service? Yeah, any comments there?
I try to say what you said in one line, but you said it's not true. I'm trying to understand what is different. You said, yes, you're reading in service, but my understanding is that how much you read, unless you say, like, you understand about Prabhupada, then you really want to go and preach and you want to spread, because that's his mood. So then you have to put it in practice to really understand. And then you have, because you're serving Prabhupada, you understand Prabhupada better. That was what I said.
The main way to understand Prabhupada is through service. That's the point.
That's what I'm saying.
Any service. Any devotional service.
Meaning you are serving, but then the greatest service is to again spread the meaning. That's what will be pleasing to Prabhupada. And so for that, you go into that. So that's why I said practical part of it.
Yeah.
One, yes, you're understanding what Prabhupada serves and all that. But for us, it will be only a theory. But unless we say, okay, this is how Prabhupada wanted it to be served. This is what Prabhupada wanted us to do.
Yeah.
So then actually when you do it, we start relishing it and then we are able to progress.
That's right.
So that's what I said in one line.
Yeah.
Theory and practice.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing.
Yeah. So, you know, if Srila Prabhupada says, bring me some milk. Bring me a glass of milk. And the follower of Prabhupada says, and then Prabhupada writes it down on a bit of paper. There you go. Someone reads the paper. Okay. Milk's good for you. Prabhupada would like a glass of milk. And it'd be very helpful for his good health. I appreciate that. And does nothing. But, I appreciate that Prabhupada drinks milk. I like that. You know, and... You know, he's not taking intoxication and he's offering his milk to Krishna. So we appreciate all those things. But we do nothing about it. You go, Prabhupada, you have that milk. I hope one day you get it. So, thank you. Hare Krishna, thank you. Someone actually brings the milk, you know, that's more than appreciated. And that was my point, that Prabhupada, he described that the Indian gentlemen who were coming to him reading his books and even appreciating his movement, he was saying that is like Santa Ras. Even the appreciation is there, oh Prabhupada, you've done this, you've done that. He says like, but these, they're actively engaged in service. And that is a much more intimate and advanced stage. It is not the Santa Ras. Don't read the books like a Santa Ras Bhakta. Read the books like a Dasyara. So these pundits in India, they're reading the books like a Santa Ras Bhakta, and they remain Santa Ras. The appreciation is there, but it is, you cannot say they are as advanced as the Dasyaras. See? So we can read the books in Santa Ras. If you love Krishna in Santa Ras, how much do you know Krishna? But if you know Krishna in Dasya, Vatsalya, Madhurya, you know Krishna more. More intimately. If you approach, so it's not just the reading of Prabhupada's books or the appreciation, it's how you enter into service, or as we see, there is friendship, which is a confidential servant, on a you know, who, you know, anticipates in a very, you know, looking after the interest, not just service. Oh, you do this, yeah. I've been asked to do this. I've been asked to do that. No, you know, this is my, you know, I will act as a well-wisher of Prabhupada. That's even more. Oh, I'm doing my service, Tim. You know, parental. I will look after Prabhupada's movement like a father or a mother. So, yes, by reading Prabhupada's books you can know Prabhupada, but there are different levels. And service is the key, and the mood of service and the confidentiality and the purity of that service is the key to how the reciprocation between yourself and Prabhupada. It's not just a blanket statement. It's like saying, I'm serving Krishna. Yes, and so is Radharani. But there's a big difference. It's all service. I'm reading Prabhupada's book. Yes, and so is someone else. But there's a big difference. So it comes back to service and the, you know, advanced state of that service, to how much Prabhupada will be revealed through reading his books. I'm getting a nod now. That's good. Yeah. All right, I don't know how we're going for time. 5 o'clock.
How's that?
Right on the dot. All right, well, we did one verse. a very, very important verse, though. Whether or not to reject the guru or serve the guru, to be or not to be, the servant, that is the question. Hare Krishna. All right, we'll see you next week. And I would imagine we'll probably do more than one verse next week. Thank you very much. I'd imagine you get so much out of one slide, isn't it? And we could do another 3 hours if we had the time.